Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
This is In Defense of Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition. Joining me is your host, Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band Link 80.
This week, we're trying something a little different, but I hope you'll enjoy it. This episode is dedicated to the topic of touring, from the perspective of musicians within the ska scene. And Aaron, you were the first musician I knew that was in a touring band, a touring ska punk band. Flat Planet toured when I was in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
What were those tours like?
So the only way we were able to tour was from the Book Your Own Fucking Life, Maximum Rock and Roll magazine, which Mike Park mentioned to me because I had expressed interest in touring. He said, this is how you do it. And so those tours were just super DIY. Like I was calling people, I was getting shows in backyards and studios, you know, like recording studios, some bars, skate parks, just kind of wherever I can get shows. And it was a ton of fun, but it was like absolutely just like as punk rock as you could get.
Yeah. And what years were those that you were touring?
I want to say it was like 94, 95, maybe somewhere around there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I started touring in 1998 with Link 80. Tours back then for us were about 2 months at a time, spanning the lower 48 in the United States. So I was on the road 8 months out of the year, packed into a van, pulling a trailer. For some reason, we'd run the AC all summer long and sit in the van in hoodies and sleeping bags. Every night, I would ask from the stage for a place to stay, and nine times out of ten, someone at the show would come through. We'd follow them back to their home, hoping for a clean place to unroll our sleeping bags, maybe a shower, and if we were lucky, be able to use a computer with a decent internet connection to check our brand new emails. So from 98 until 2002, that was my day-to-day existence. And it started to taper off, but my last full-blown tour, that was in 2006. I spent a lot of time in my 30s reflecting on this time in my life and thought, that's it. My touring days are behind me. Touring seemed like something that only young people do. I had already had my unshowered days of wearing the same socks on stage that I woke up wearing that morning, and I didn't see myself returning to the road. And with Omnigon, I found myself again traveling to play shows. When I originally started this band, I imagined we'd play three or four shows a year, opening for friends who would come through town, or heading down to SoCal for a one-off. And I soon found that more and more of the shows I wanted to play were out of state, time zones away, or even across the Atlantic. I found myself returning to tour, and the tour had changed. Tour no longer was a months-long commitment crammed into a van, hoping we'd get to the venue after another grueling 16-hour overnight drive. Promoters now provide ticket counts so we know how well we can expect the shows to be attended. We stay in hotels every night, and they aren't horrible. The band makes an effort to eat food other than Taco Bell. The lack of quantity has been made up for in quality. So, Aaron, in March of 2025, that brought the most touring I've done since 2006.
Wow.
Knowing that I would be in close proximity to so many other touring musicians, I took the opportunity to get outside perspectives on what tour is like now versus what it was like when I started touring. And it's an odd perspective, being one of the kids of the third wave, now being a middle-aged adult in this new era.
I'm just going to hit start on it.
This is Joe Gittleman of the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and the Kilograms.
So I'm going to do a little episode about touring.
Okay.
What's the difference between touring in 2025 versus touring in the 90s?
The thing you're holding right here is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Is the cell phone and the technology has made it a much different thing. I remember the first time we took the Dropkick Murphys to Europe in like 1997, and their tour manager was the drummer from Stiff Little Fingers, Jim Riley, the drummer from Stiff Little Fingers. For some reason, was Dropkick's tour manager, and like this is a paper map era here. Yeah. This is a ask the guy on the street, you know. And they'd roll down the window and do Sprechen Sie Deutsch or whatever, you know, and see if you get anything out of these guys or get somebody to point you in the right direction. But so, you know, I think that's really changed a lot. You know, I remember going on some of the early tours that I went on. You'd come home and there'd be voice messages on your answering machine that could lead to your next tour. And those, so like the way that things unfolded in a much different kind of succession or pace, you know.
Yeah, is there anything you miss from that era of touring?
I don't think that being more connected digitally has done anyone any real favors, to be honest. Well, maybe in some ways, some people it has.
Yeah.
As a globe, though, I mean, it feels like it's doing a lot of damage.
Well, I'd rather give you a not-so-simple answer like cell phones, but...
The voice you're hearing is Jay Navarro, vocalist of the Suicide Machines.
Big corporations took over venues. They kind of came in, people like Clear Channel originally, before they changed their name and all that.
Yeah.
But before that, it was like independent promoters. You'd have big promoters, like, in Detroit, we had Clutch Cargos, which was really just a bunch of people who were in bands, half of them. But it was like the big... company that did the promotions and booked all the shows, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a corporation, you know. So you either had the DIY shows, your friends who had bars, or the big wigs, which were just dudes that were people, women and men who were already in bands, running venues in different cities. Sometimes they're lucky enough to have two venues, but they would do all the promotions, and then people like Clear Channel started buying in, or of course you had Golden Voice in Hollywood, but. And then, was it Bill Graham Presents in San Francisco? But besides that, everywhere else, it was like someone who owned a venue would start their own promotion company, right? That would be their thing. And then nowadays, you've got people like Live Nation, AEG, who have like bought in or leased out all these venues, you know? And they kind of control the monopoly on things. To me, that's like the biggest change from when I was younger to now. There's a lot less... there's a lot of independent popping back up, which is beautiful, actually. A lot of little DIY spots and even house shows. But I feel like the biggest difference is, big companies bought into this thing.
What's the venue that's now defunct that you miss the most?
Ooh. Well, it's not defunct so much. I love Fireside Bowl in Chicago. But they don't really have punk shows anymore. But that was, like, really, like, easily my favorite... place to play.
Mine too.
Hell in the world, really. Yeah. You know, and something about that place. I mean, I would drive down from Detroit just to go see shows there.
What was the best show you saw at Fireside?
Bikini Kill, maybe?
Damn.
I saw Bikini Kill there. That was mind-blowingly insane. Shit, man. I don't know. That one took the cake.
When did you start touring?
When you're hearing Jeff Rosenstock. I caught up with him in Los Angeles.
What touring? What would you count as touring?
Anything where you're... leaving town for an extended period of time.
Is a weekend an extended period of time?
Yeah.
2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what has changed between that first tour in 2000 and your most recent tour in 2025?
that like we're not in a car.
How are you traveling these days?
A van.
A van?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Van and trailer. Yeah.
What's the nicest vehicle you've ever toured in?
A van and trailer.
Yeah,
a Sprinter.
Anything bigger?
No. We were that first tour. We were gonna tour in Mike Costa's dad's Winnebago, and then he wanted us to like sign a thing that said we were liable for it, and that didn't pan out. So that we didn't tour in it, but it was parked in front of my parents' house while, like, we were, like, riding out the aftermath of all that.
Yeah.
I would say that is the nicest one, but it never left.
What keeps you touring?
I like playing music.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like playing music, and it seems like people like that we're playing music these days, and that's a nice thing. It's a good vibe. They're just good vibes. I like doing it.
Danny Lohr of Against All Authority.
What was the first year that you toured? I believe it was 1994.
Okay.
I think.
How long was that tour?
2 months? Six weeks? 6 to 8 weeks? Something like that.
How did you book that tour?
Book your own fucking life.
And how has tour changed from that time to now?
It's 100% different. I mean, the shows that we played back then were a little wild. Like, it was weird for us to play a show where there wasn't 3 or 4 fights. Mm-hmm. Now I don't see. Now it's like a lot of people that are coming to enjoy the music and to be a part of it, of what's going on, instead of coming there to just destroy things. And I lived through and toured through the whole Napster thing, where you would go to a show and you could, like, make ends meet and get to the next show by selling CDs. And then the next thing, like, it just changed within a blink of an eye. Between one tour and the next tour, we went from, you know, selling 100 CDs at a show to selling, like, three or four CDs, because everybody stopped buying CDs. Everything just went straight up to, like, people just, you know, getting it for free.
How is it returning to touring after such a long break?
This is great. This is, like, you know, it's been very easy for us, luckily, you know.
I know that with Barry and I, we're used to how we used to tour and sleep on floors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you and Joe and Spikey ever just look at each other when you're in, like, a hotel?
Oh, yeah.
And just be like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time. There were plenty of times where we just slept in parking lots or, you know, just rest stops wherever we could, sides of the roads. Oh, that call my name. Oh.
Esteban Flores, keyboard player in Mata Mosca and the Jer Band.
I got to, like, really explore a lot more of the parameter was back then. Back then when I was touring, it was still during, like, the DACA issues. There were still issues with immigration.
Yeah.
And myself being an immigrant, it was really hard for me to travel with the fear of deportation. But now, you know, since the Obama thing came with DACA, I was able to travel without being scared of being deported, and I was able to travel and explore, like, other states that I, at that point in my life, thought I would never get to. So it was cool.
How do you stay healthy on tour?
I don't.
Or you don't?
No, I don't really. I eat like shit. I drink. I smoke. I don't sleep that much. I should probably start changing habits, though. At the age of 32, after 30s, things hurt a little more.
My name is Mike Susinski, and I play guitar and sing in the band Kill Lincoln, and I run Bad Time Records.
How has touring changed for you since then to now?
Third year, what I would do to go.
Oh, it's changed so much in so many ways. I mean, I think the biggest change is that when we go on tour now, like, I know that the shows are, like, kind of gonna be good. You know, like, chances are decent that it will be a good show, or a show at least attended by, you know, some number of people. In the past, like, you know, we would book something in, you know, Newport, Rhode Island or whatever, and we'd show up and there'd be zero people. Like, we've played shows to zero people. I think Austin, Texas, we played at 1 a.m. at the end of, like, an 8-band bill. The bartender was the only person left in the room, and he walked outside for a cigarette, so we were playing to zero people. And that was not the worst show we've ever played, but yeah, that was our zero people show. And we had, you know, we were in Austin, we were in the middle of, like, I don't know, we were trying to connect some tour dates or whatever. But yeah, so now I feel better about the shows all being, like, someone is going to come out. There are going to be some people, whether it's a lot of people or not a lot of people, there will be people having fun. And that's something I'm pretty confident in.
Take care, man.
And have fun.
Have a good one, Joe.
Thank you.
You too, Joe. Thanks for everything, man.
I'll see you soon.
We are backstage after a Big D and the Kids table concert in Portland, Oregon, speaking with Dave McWayne.
Have a good
job. Last thing, what's your favorite thing about tour?
So real quick, so just ending on that bit is,
I like going on tour and seeing new places, but with me, with music, usually it's more about like the music, and then you go on tour to do the music. My favorite thing on tour would probably be, of course, meeting new people and seeing new places. And the biggest importance it's had on my life is the fact that sometimes, you know, people say things like, you Americans, you never travel, you know, why don't you travel? And they don't understand that we can't afford it. Most of us can't afford to take the time off of work and then book the hotels and book the flights. So not many Americans can afford what they call culture. So what's lovely about being in a band is that we've somehow been able to afford culture. And, you know, it, because we sang for our supper and was able to see every country around the world by singing for your supper. But, you know, people got to really, like, realize that everyone should have the culture that I have. I shouldn't have had it. I shouldn't have had this amazing view of the world and earth, but everyone should have it. So I just wanted to just say that I accidentally had this wonderful thing, and everyone should somehow strive. And I understand it's all about, you know, money, but anyway. So my favorite thing about touring is playing new countries, meeting new people, and having a better grasp of what's happening on an everyday basis in the world.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
And may I say, what I mean by that is when I can't sleep at night sometimes, because sometimes you can't sleep, I think about what's happening on the other end of the earth, like China, and I know they're awake, and I know certain bars and streets and certain sewing people, and I think about them because I know they're awake, and it makes me helps me fall asleep.
I love that. I love, me personally, yeah. I love getting to reconnect with people like you who are the other youths of the third wave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point, too. Oh, yeah. I mean, this tour?
Yeah.
This tour is, I think this is a very monumental tour.
Why is that?
The people that are on this tour is like threads in a good, great sweater. Like, you got Link 80 people. You have Boston's people. You have, Bouncing Soul, right? Big D, and then the Pomps and the Doped Up Dollies. Like, everybody who's a part of this tour is like, you know, threads to a kilt. You know what I mean? Like, it's a big deal. I think it's a very amazing group of bands together.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to be kind of like, I smoked weed, but I smoked a little weed.
So, Aaron, from these quotes, you can kind of hear how tour has changed since we started touring. And a lot of these people started around the same time we did.
Yeah.
So, Aaron.
Yeah.
Do you like driving on tour?
No, not really. I mean, I will often do a decent amount of driving, but I don't really... It's not my favorite thing to do. I like to be, in the passenger seat, probably my favorite position.
Yeah. What do you like to be the DJ in the passenger seat?
Sure, yeah. I'll be the DJ, roll the window down. I know being the passenger seat does hold the responsibility of keeping the conversation going with the driver. Mm-hmm. You got to keep the driver awake. That's a very important role.
Definitely so important.
I can handle that.
Yeah. I always drive on tour, and it's because I like driving. Sometimes something about being behind the wheel, taking in the world as it unfolds from the horizon, that's always been appealing to me. I also know that if I'm not driving, I'll just fall asleep. Tour is an experience I want to get the most out of. So even if it's seeing the same stretch of freeway I've seen dozens of times in my life, I want to take it all in.
What do you like least about touring?
This is photographer Ray Mystic in Gainesville, Florida.
The honest answer is it's hard to go to the bathroom. Like, and adjust. Yeah.
Extrapolate on that a little bit. Like what? Like, because the venue bathrooms are gross?
No, because my body, it takes time to adjust moving around different places.
Okay.
I'm going to pick a different one. The lack of sleep if there's an early load in.
Yes. And you're not good at sleeping in the van.
I cannot sleep in a van.
Can't sleep on a plane?
Cannot sleep on a plane.
Can't sleep in a moving vehicle.
Cannot sleep in a moving vehicle.
So that makes touring kind of hard.
I'm always editing, usually, when I'm in a van, mm-hmm. so that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I just prioritize sleep.
And best place to sit in the van for you?
Is behind the driver.
Why is that?
Because I'm usually editing photos, so if I'm in that spot, I have a good view of, like, what can be seen by the driver in a van. And it's like least shaky. And I get car sick, so if I sit anywhere else, it'll make me car sick or it's too shaky for my laptop.
How do you feel about overnight drives?
I hate them because I have to sleep.
Yeah. Do you like driving, or do you like always being a passenger?
In general?
Yeah.
I like driving. I prefer to drive always.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about live photography.
Let's do it.
Favorite shot to capture from a band?
I like taking photos of Ume doing anything. Mainly jumping from high places and being caught by people.
Nice. What's the best way to anticipate what's going to happen on stage next to get a good photo?
Ooh, that's a great question. Knowing the music. And if you don't know the music, then kind of following the rhythm of what's going on. I kind of follow the drummer in a way, or maybe like anticipating, you know, measures, you know, of a song and being like, okay, this sounds like something may happen here. And most of the time it does.
My name is Jer. I am Jer the person, the human. And then there is Jer the band. That is my band that helps me create these songs that I play live. I also have a YouTube channel called Scout 2 Network where I record covers of songs, and sometimes I yap about whatever I feel like yapping out about that day on YouTube or on TikTok or on Instagram. And I also play in a million other bands.
When you're touring, do you like to be a passenger or do you like to drive?
I love driving.
What do you think about while you drive?
Sometimes nothing. I like to listen to music or put on a podcast and like listen to that and listen to what it's saying. But other than that, honestly, it's like, it's kind of a moment where I can decompress. And as someone who exists and works on my phone, it's nice to just not be on my phone for hours. And it's like, to some people like to, I like driving to me is like fidgeting almost, you know? I can focus on this one thing and just do it and like let my mind just focus on not hitting a car or getting off the road.
I barged into Les and Jake's backstage and recorded this with Buddy and Matt.
Okay, well, so first off, we were in the van in with an actual Rand McNally map, arguing about where we were. And you know how like a Rand McNally has like the big broad scope of the whole state, and that'll be like downtown. So we had to like, you know, go to the zoom in downtown thing. That has definitely changed. Like, people now are like, oh, I can't figure out where we're going. And then all they have to do is, like, say the name and, like, you know, go into Google Maps.
That actually makes me mad that people don't know how to read a map.
It's pretty disturbing. But what we knew was if we were near the college or, like, people were selling crack, we were close to the club. It was, like, either or, you know?
Well, that hasn't changed.
Yeah, it really has.
Right, that's still
really
the same.
Because, like, you know, it's either, like, you're going to be at the college part of the thing and it's going to be, like, there's a venue there, or it's, like, we're in the bad part of town, like early.
Well,
on,
I mean, I would go with the, you know, I started, the first tour was in a station wagon, and now I'm touring in a bus. So,
Clark Griswold.
There you go. That's a little different.
Describe the sketchiest place you stayed on tour.
I remember, this is not the sketchiest place, probably. Oh, no, I know the sketchiest. I just remembered it.
This is when we're still sleeping on people's floors, but usually that was fine. There might be like a dog or two or something. This one, I was like, I'll just go in the kitchen because there was other stuff going on. And I laid, and then I looked around. I was like, what is all that? It was turtle poop, because they had a turtle that was cruising around and pooping on the floor everywhere. So everybody that put their sleeping bag down was like on top of turtle poop.
Oh, that's disgusting.
That's my worst.
Colin Clive from Mustard Traveling. Like, are you able to sleep in the van?
No.
Never. Absolutely not.
Almost never. I work from the road, so I'm basically working from 8 to 4 or 5 or whatever. So
okay.
It's really rare that you'll find me sleeping in the van. I wish I could, but I never really did.
So since you're working, do you not drive?
I used to be one of the main drivers, but since I am working, yeah, I don't drive during the day. Up until about 4 months ago, I would drive after shows because I stopped drinking 8 years ago. So I was being kind to them and driving after the shows. And it's been, you know, rocky occasionally, but they mostly behaved. But fairly recently, they all kind of lost their privileges of me and my kindness of doing it. So I have abandoned that gracious... whatever you want to call it, and I do not drive regularly after shows anymore.
Okay.
It'll be a rotation. I might do it once in a while to be nice, but they've had to step up and figure it out. So
what do you fill your time with from load in until you hit the stage?
I definitely, looking for ice cream is high on the list. Ice cream is relatively easy to find. Uh-huh. It used to be record stores primarily, until I got addicted to ice cream. Record stores are a lot harder to find near venues. Like, it's pretty hit or miss. You're kind of lucky if you find one walking distance. Ice cream, it's kind of everywhere. So I do those two things. And I watch a lot more bands. A lot of this has to do with stopping drinking. It used to just be like sit in the back room and drink beer. But now I watch bands a lot more, which is awesome. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then look for ice cream and cheap food, cheap tacos, Diet Cokes, you know.
This is Max Beckman of the band Half Past Two.
Sometimes you just gotta do the interview wherever it happens, right? Okay, one of the things I noticed about you, Max, is that you have to work pretty diligently while you're on tour. So explain to people what you do for work.
I own a website called cheapgraphicnovels.com. So I sell graphic novels. And when I'm on the road, I have to work because as a small business, I am the only one that can do a lot of the things. So it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I have to do certain things to keep the business going. Thankfully, I have good people back at home that take care of all that stuff, but a lot of things only I can do.
So what does your setup usually look like when you're working at a show?
I find wherever I can sit and have my laptop at a table, and I like using a mouse. I can't use the touchpad. I mean, I can, but it really sucks. So I have to like have a little bit of a setup, and I'll just find wherever I can. I don't always do it at shows. I try to do most of it in the van, but there's just not always enough time. I used to wake up earlier and try to do most of the work before everyone else like got up and before we left a place in the morning, but I like to get more sleep now. It just makes everything more easier, and I feel so much better on tour getting a lot more sleep that it's worth it.
So you know this, Aaron, but those who haven't thought about it, most of the time on tour is spent in transit, mm-hmm. and you have to find ways to keep yourself healthy, both physically and mentally. The longer the stretch on the road, the more important this becomes. I think we've both seen people not deal with the effects of being on the road easily. It's something you have to learn to do over time. I spoke with Brent Friedman at Taco Bell, which, Aaron, you'll be happy to hear, was one of only two times we stopped at Taco Bell on this tour.
Well, back then, I, like, learned how to do the whole, like, oh, like, back then, you, like, really learned how much you spent on food and stuff like that. And so we, like, learned the whole, like, buying a ton of ramen ahead of time and, like, canned food and just, like, you know, so we were saving money doing that. Getting to eat normal meals. I no longer am doing that canned food life. I do miss the, we used to like go to Pilot and get like a, one of their coffee cups and then crumple up the ramen and the seasoning and then use their hot water and just make ramen at like the Pilots and Flying J. And then the tour hack was adding a little bit of crunchy peanut butter so you'd make the poor man's pad thai.
Oh, that's
very good. That wasn't 2005. I later learned that, but yeah, that was very good.
That's definitely a food hack.
Yeah, Jessica straight up just still makes it at home.
Just say your name and what you do.
I'm CJ and I play bass in Kill Lincoln.
How has tour changed for you?
Oh man, I feel like we've just gotten better at just the little things, like, you know, having a case to put your cables in, and
having cases for your drums.
Yeah, and like warming up and not just like blowing your voice out every night or like breaking your back and doing stretches, like all of that body prep stuff has been just, I wouldn't say like a learning curve, but like each tour I feel like I learned something new. Yeah. That I've been missing, like eating vegetables or like fiber pills, all of that stuff has just changed drastically since the beginning. And also like getting older, my body needs a lot more stuff that I need to realize that I should take care of myself for, versus, you know, like 25 or however old I was. It's just like, whenever I can go out, play, wake up the next day, and it's like totally fine. Not really anymore.
Candice Maritato of the bands Woolbright and Jer.
How do you stay healthy on tour?
Okay, healthy on tour. Being mindful of what you eat. So honestly, I was vegan for a long time. I no longer am, for just my own personal, I have eggs and stuff like that and veggies, but like my go-to always is veggies, protein, rice. That is how, and then fruit, nuts, things like that. Having healthy snacks, so like nuts and fruit in the van, is important to me. And it really helps just your brain feel good, give your brain energy and not feel so poopy. So
hi, this is Woody. I play for Jer.
How do you stay healthy on tour?
Water. Drink water. Drink water, change your socks.
What's your favorite thing to eat on tour?
I think either something local near the venue. That's usually my favorite thing, because it's kind of like the local flavor. Yeah. It's fun to get.
Okay. Sheets or Wawa?
Oh, Sheets.
Ross or Ross Dress for Less?
This interview's over.
Okay, we're at Sheets. What did you order?
I ordered mac and cheese bites, and I ordered
This is Savannah Tweed of Half Past Two.
Black raspberry shake.
As a 19-year-old, are you worried about eating healthy on tour?
I definitely am.
Really?
Yes. Although not today, obviously. But I feel like, I don't know, I like think about it a lot, but I am not always able to change it, you know? Especially when we're in the South, like all we were eating is fried food, basically. Yeah. But there's only so much you can do. But I feel like it's definitely important to take care of your body, and it helps take care of your mind as well. And I feel like being on tour, you have to be really conscious of how you're feeling, because it can make a huge difference in your experience.
I'm Emily. I play saxophone in a lot of bands.
What are your favorite things about DIY touring?
I think that it allows you to connect with both the people in the other bands and like the audience better than when I've played like shows that are a little less DIY and a little more like corporate, for lack of better words. Every show is fun, but I hate the barrier kind of thing. I like feeling more like I'm on the same level with everyone else, and doing DIY stuff lets me do that. And I feel like, you know, you have to lean on your community even more when you're doing DIY stuff, and there's a beauty in that for sure.
In the hours between when we get to a venue to when you go on stage, how do you like to fill your time?
I love to get a silly little coffee, local to wherever we're at. Always has to be a local thing. Fuck Starbucks, fuck Dunkin', I'm so sorry. Not my vibe. I feel like when we are touring from city to city, sometimes you don't get to really experience a lot about what it has to offer. So at least being able to get a little local coffee, something like that, gives me a taste of what's up. Other than that, like, I like to go on a little walk, you know, get the vibe. But lay low. I try to preserve my energy for when I'm on the stage.
This is Mike McDermott, currently of the Kilograms, but his other gig is being the drummer in Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
I don't know.
How important is being a good hang on tour?
Oh, God, 90%.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, man.
More important, musicianship or?
Well, I mean, I feel like when you get to our
sure.
level, you sort of should be able to hold your own.
Yeah.
To a degree. And then the factor of the hang, just yeah. That's when that comes in, you know what I mean? Yeah, you should never be like, wow, how are you out on the road right now?
Yeah.
Like, you should be still striving for those 10,000 hours, man. Like,
yeah.
Did you leave your mother's... You left your mother's basement.
But even if you have those 10,000 hours and you're a bad hang...
Oh, yes, I mean. Like, that yeah. doesn't matter. Like, yeah. for sure. It means everything.
Yeah.
Everything. The hang is everything. I mean, especially if they're in your band, let alone if they're, like, in the touring party. You know what I mean? And we've all been there where, like, there might be that one guy in the touring party that you're like, God, you know, blank and blank from blank. It's like, God, I can't believe that. And, you know, like... And it's odd. Everybody, you know, he's the and but slowly those dudes peter out, and then and even like to this day, you're like, I wonder what happened to, and you're like, oh, you know what happened to him? He wasn't a good hang, and it was like later, beat it. So no, it means everything. I definitely yeah, because I mean you're living, you're trying to, we're trying to survive out here as a unit, you know what I mean, and not as like three independent ships. You know, we had to sail fucking together in order to make it all work and live. Then we're living as one in a commune room, you know, and we're eating the same stuff, and so it's like, you know, you have to. We all have to. Everybody's got to live as one.
Sammy K yeah. of the Kilograms.
You mentioned a little bit sobriety.
Yeah.
And so hurry up and wait. Something we know.
The waiting is the hardest part.
Do you think that
loading
the hurry up and wait
to soundcheck at 8?
Do you think the hurry up and wait is a contributing factor to musicians using?
I think hurry up and wait is a factor to people having a 4 o'clock beer. I also think that boredom is a thing, and I also think the ideals of the dead ideals of sex, drugs, and rock and roll are a big factor. I joked about the concept of Peter Pan and never growing up. Like, if you're a lifer, you spend your life in a van driving around playing dive bars, small music venues, with the hopes to get in a better place, but most of us ultimately just do this cycle of the same 40 venues once a year until one closes and the next one opens in the same building with a different name. I think that it also has to do with your age and how you're living and what your mental health is like. And like, I think that if I didn't dip out in a van at 16 with a bunch of dudes that were feeding me beers and, or not feeding me beers, giving me, sharing their beers, nobody forced it down my fucking throat, and I wasn't a mental health basket case, and I didn't understand therapy and depression at 17, I would have not been as fucked up as I was. But I do think that this lifestyle is not conducive to folks like me with these addictive personalities. But the cool thing now is that there's so many folks that sobered up that, like, I'd say out of my like phone book of musicians, 40% of them are 12-steppers or sober or did 12-step and are still, they don't drink anymore, but they're not meeting folks. Like, in fact, I don't go to any 12-step meetings that aren't musician based, industry based.
Sure.
Which is great, because within recovery now I can talk to a buddy who's a publicist on the road, or a front of house, or a lighting guy, or a bass player, or a tech, or you know, and the magic of that is that those are all primarily Zoom based, that I know that every day at between 4 and 8, I can hit a meeting in the afternoon with like-minded individuals in the same boat being on the road, versus just walking into a 12-step up the block here in Santa Ana, where I might be the only guy with a alternative lifestyle. And in the same breath, if I'm struggling at 3 in the morning, I can tune into a morning meeting in Europe, in England, and be able to get, you know, I've gotten meetings in Germany on the internet. I don't understand what they're fucking saying, but I hear the strength and hope and experience in their fucking voice, and it helps, you know?
So, Aaron, you don't have any kids, but I'm sure you can imagine.
I have a dog.
You have a dog. See, you have to be away from your dog.
Yeah.
But the hardest part of tour for me, in my opinion, is being away from the people you love. So for you, that'd be your wife and your dog.
Yeah.
But this goes double when those people are your kids. And more, I see my friends navigating parenthood while maintaining a tour schedule. I'd like to think it gets easier as they get older, but I'm not so sure.
Hey, what's up? My name is Chris. I play drums in the Agrolites.
Yeah. As a parent, how do you balance being in a band and being a dad?
You know what? I'm going to say it. It starts with my awesome wife. She is very supportive, and just the communication with her is everything. Like communicating with her, balancing, you know, her work, and then having like our parents involved too, that helps a lot. So, but at the end of the day, you know, it is work. It is work. So we balance it out and kind of, but luckily touring isn't like that extensive as it used to be. We're kind of going out in pockets, you know. We'll do like weekenders, or we'll go out for like 2 weeks and then we'll be back for a bit. And so it's not like it used to be, just like crazy, like months out of the year, like tons of, you know, time away. But yeah, it's a hard balance, but you know, with the communication and, you know, support, it works out.
Do the other guys have kids?
I'm the only one in the Agrolites that has kids.
Okay.
Or a kid.
Yeah. And is 2 weeks the longest run you've done since becoming a father?
Since being a dad? No, we've done, I think the longest is 4 weeks. Okay. And that was the last run we did with the Aquabats last summer.
How was that?
It was, I mean, the tour was good, but being away, I feel like I was home enough to where she was born up to like she was about maybe almost a year old. So like I got to be home during a lot of the milestones, all that, you know, she started crawling and all that. So, but yeah, being away for that long, you come back and it's kind of a trip, you know, see her grow so much. And like, I just remember like sneaking into the house and like seeing the back of her head, and like we made a plan. I told my wife, like, let me sit down and let her see me, you know, I want to see her reaction. But just seeing like the back of her like head, like just behind her, like I was like, man, she looks so much older already. And just the talking and everything, you know. But yeah, it's you know, it's hard, but you know, it is work.
Yeah, explain. You mentioned it being work, but explain the like dichotomy of, you know, it's work, but it's also fun. How do you explain that to people?
Well, the fun part really comes with like, is this something? Because a lot of people kind of, I feel like, get a lot of like a common misconception of touring, like, I feel like it has to be right for that person. Like, it's a certain kind of lifestyle, you know, just living in the van, driving like long extensions on the road, not a lot of sightseeing, you know, not too much of, you know, stopping. And like, you know, people kind of assume like, oh, you went here, did you go see, you know, this, that? And you're like, nah, I was there for like, I saw the venue and the hotel and that's about it, you know. Yeah. So where was I getting at? Yeah, it's fun in the sense of like me being kind of, I've always kind of been like a streets person, so like it works for me in that way. And then but I mean, the part of it being work is, you know, I feel like if it wasn't come helping with an income, you know, like things would be different now opposed to how it was back in the day. You know, you're young, you got no responsibilities, you could just go and do it, you know. So now it's like it's more of like a, you know, it's work in that aspect, you know, where there is an income, so you're doing it for that too, you know. That comes into play. So it's a kind of a rough balance. I don't know if that's
My name is Becky Fontaine. I am one of the
great set.
Thank you. I'm one of your fans. I am one of the front people of the Iron Roses.
And you're a parent, correct?
Yeah.
Speak a little bit to being a parent and also fronting a band.
It's wild, especially because my kids are old enough now where, like, their friends can check me out on Spotify. But they've come on the road with us a couple of times, and at first I think they liked it. Now it's just like, ugh, I don't want to do that again. But again, like, I'm actually missing my daughter's high school graduation to be in Europe on the biggest opportunity that we've had this year, which is something that is very hard for me. But I have approached it as I have the opportunity to model chasing your dreams for my kids. And while it may not be the easy decision, it's the right one for me and for them.
This is Justin Amons of Kitty Cat Fan Club and Omnigo.
Like kind of a primary caregiver of your child.
Yeah.
How do you balance touring and parenthood?
Well, since this isn't like a long tour, it's, I mean, we'll see how it goes. This is the first one since I had a kid, you know? I set him up for it for success. Like, we got some new stuff for him to play with that is directly, like, affiliated with me. He knows that I'm playing drums, and he plays drums, so he likes the fact that I'm playing drums. But he's been saying all week, he's like, I'm going to go on tour. And it just makes me, like, want to cry a little bit. I'm just like, man, I wish you could. Like, I don't want to... I don't have, like, a huge desire to be away from them. It's super cool.
What's the longest you've been away from me?
This is it.
This will be it?
Yeah, this will be it.
What
the longest I've been away is one night.
Is gonna feel like?
Good for me. I think he's going to be maybe a little resentful, maybe a little frustrated with me, a little happy to see me, but probably, like, confused why I left, because I've just always been there every single day since he was born.
Yeah.
So... But my wife travels a lot, so it's kind of, like, he knows that people go on work trips. My wife's gone for, like, a week every month, right?
Yeah.
So he's used to that, but he always knows that I'm home with him. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know when I get home.
Tara Hahn of Half Past Two.
We're both parents. How do you manage parent life and band life?
I have a really supportive partner. And my family's really supportive, so that's really, really important to get to do what I want to do. And without them, I could not do that. And, you know, just trying to remember that this is fun, because one of the things about tour is, like, it can get old really fast if you let it, and then all the fun things pass you by. And you have to remember that, like, this is what you wanted, you know? And you have to take the bad with the good with the bad. And make friends. That's really important. Make friends, talk to the fans, and yeah, just have fun.
So one of the blind spots I never really thought about until Half Past Two started touring is the accessibility of venues. I think about what a big part of my life has been devoted to attending shows in these type of spaces, and I've never really considered what it would be like to lose access to that. Tara has taken it upon herself to be an advocate for this cause.
One of the big things you advocate for is accessibility at venues. Speak a little bit about that.
At home, my daughter uses a wheelchair, so when I go to venues, I always have to call ahead and make sure that she can get in the front door and that there's a place for her to go to the bathroom and all that stuff. So when I go out on tour, when I play at places, I always look for those things because it's important to me that everybody be able to go no matter what. And in doing what I was doing just
like for wheelchair accessibility, I've learned so much about the accessibility needs of other people. Like, a lot of people want to know, like, do they have all gender restrooms? Does the bathroom have like a lock on the door? Does the venue use flashing lights? You know, just all those sorts of things. And a lot of venues are not accessible. And that's why people with, you know, disabilities, various disabilities, can't go to shows. But there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to go to a show, especially since with our style of music, with ska music, with punk music, we boast that we're so inclusive. Like, I want everybody to be included in the inclusivity of ska and punk music and live music.
Where do most venues fall short as far as accessibility?
Well, number one, they don't provide the information on their websites. That's like the easiest thing for venues to do, because that's the first place people can look, and then they can just make that decision right there. And it costs them $0, and it's low effort. But the other thing is, I feel like a lot of venues don't take into account what, like, for me personally, like, wheelchair accessibility means. Because you'll get there and they'll be like, oh yeah, it does say we're accessible, but we have one tiny little step. And I'm like, that means you're not accessible, because some people can't do one tiny little step. Some people just can't do stairs, like, not even if you're in a wheelchair, like, you know, you have like a reason that you can't do stairs. And then the other thing too that I've seen at some venues that I wish I saw at more venues is having an area that's accessible right up against the stage. Because a lot of times people go to venues and their accessible area is all the way in the back. They just want to be able to see like anybody else or be up in the action, especially at our kinds of shows, because that's the exciting place to be. So yeah, I think venues could do a better job with providing the information first and foremost. And then, yeah, just thinking it all the way through and making sure that, like, yeah, their bathrooms are actually accessible. And those are my things.
Yeah. We're going to record a little thing about tour.
Yeah.
Because you tour.
I do. I've been on the road for a month, dude.
State your name and say what you do.
My name is Kevin Brooks, but I also go by Kevin Von Helvet, my comedy name. And I'm a comedian. I'm an inspirational speaker. And I'm in a shitty Netflix show called My Life with a Walter Boy is playing a teacher, and it's fucking the worst show you've ever seen.
And what might people notice about you?
My big boner. and also my wheelchair.
Okay, so...
Yeah, that's the comedy guy. Not the...
What don't people realize about being in a wheelchair?
I think, like, on the surface, you're like, oh, they're in a wheelchair, they can't stand up, but there's a lot of other stuff that goes with it, right? And, like, this is so personal, but, like, a lot of people, like, your pisser doesn't work, your shitter doesn't fucking work, and, like, you have to plan your whole day around that. It's kind of crazy. Like, that's, like, the brutal truth of the honesty. They're, like, people are like, hey, man, you can stay at my house. Like, you're rad. I'm like, how big's your bathroom? Will I fit in it? I don't have to take a piss. You know what I mean? So, like, you have to plan the thing I feel like I lost... But I've kind of got it back because I've been in a wheelchair for a long time and, like, sorted it out. But spontaneity. When you're walking, you'd be like, oh, I'll go wherever the fuck I want. Someone's like, hey, come to a house party. You're like, all right, well, is there stairs? Who's going to get me up those stairs? Come to the beach. I'm like, well, sand doesn't really work very well. The wheels, like, who's going to pull me through the sand, right? You know? So that's something I think people don't always maybe think of.
So Half Past Two makes a big effort to make sure that venues are accessible.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think, like, I mean, I'll fucking call this fucking venue out right now that we're at. Can I say where we're at?
Yeah, go ahead.
We're at Vivid and I go to Fest there's 2 years in a row doing comedy. There's multiple venues. This one was like, I'm VIP, compliments of you. Yeah. And they were like, I don't know, man. Like, I was like, can I just go where I can see? I'm not going to cause problems. They're like, I don't know, man. Like, most places are kind of cool. But, like, if... And you smell farts first, too. Like, some guy just farted right in my mouth earlier. And, like, I didn't know who it was, but I smelled it first. I'm right at ass level, dude.
So you thought your touring days were behind you, but post-pandemic, you seem to have started to ramp up the amount of touring you've been doing.
Yeah, and with how we approach touring now, I don't foresee a day where that door will fully close. I mean, sure, I can't be on the road for weeks at a time, but if I manage my time efficiently and make the most out of that time, why would I stop? I love being on tour.
Do you think there's a point in your life where you will stop touring?
I don't think so, at least willingly as a human being. If I can't afford to anymore because of economics, or if the United States crumbles to the point where no one is touring, then I feel like those are two avenues. But other than that, as long as I am able to, as long as people want to come out to shows, as long as bands want me to play with them, it's something that I never want to stop doing.
Well, I'm Javi Ayala. I'm from Miami, Florida. I'm a trombone player. I've been on tour with Jer for the past like 2 years.
I'm Ricky Weber, and I'm from Michigan.
Do you see a point in your life where you would stop touring?
I've thought about it for sure. I've thought about it many times, but I don't think I can ever actually stop full time. Maybe take a pause, but I don't think I can ever like fully stop.
Now that I've been surrounded by it for a while, there's always that little voice in the back of your head where you're like, well, you know, you can't do this forever. I'm like, who says who? You know, like anything can happen. And if you can make it work, you know, depends on how much I want it. And I really want it. So there you go.
Hi, my name is Kaylee K. Moy Malloy. I play in the band Catbite, and I tour around with them a lot. And I also do K. Moy the Band, which is my own band. And we would like to tour in that, even though we haven't really yet, but we've done like 2 day stints. So that's cool.
Do you ever see a point in your life where you will stop touring?
Yeah, because I might be too old to do it. But then, you know, when I heard that fucking what's-his-name from goddamn Jesus is a friend of mine is goddamn 70 years old and still playing the bass and dancing around, I'm like, maybe I can survive that long. Never mind. I like touring a lot.
Do you think there'll ever come a point in your life where you'll want to stop touring?
Drew Skibitsky of Kill Lincoln.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, at least for a little bit. I don't know. You know, killing it doesn't do it to the extent where we're, like, burning ourselves out. You know, we do it a healthy amount where we're staying active. We're seeing the entire country at least once a year. We're doing fun stuff when it comes up. But we're not killing ourselves. You know, so I don't know. I'm going to do it as long as I physically can. And at some point, my body will degrade, and I'll no longer be able to do this anymore. And that day will come, and I will be okay with it.
Do you see a point in your life where you will stop touring?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. Where is that?
I don't know where it is, and I hope it's not soon. But I can definitely see it because, I mean, I think everyone would agree touring is very, 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 very difficult. It's hard on your body, but it's also hard on your brain, and it's also hard like financially. Like it is not. It's just like we are all doing this, but you have to do this because you want to have fun, right? And at our level, like if you're not having fun, you can't justify it any other way, because we're really not out here making big dollars. Like we're lucky if we can break even and make a little bit, but so that's one big challenge, right? So we're stepping away from day jobs to come do this because we love it and we're having fun, but also like it's just hard. It's like the hardest thing that I've probably ever done. But we keep doing it because it's awesome.
It's also super fun.
It's super fun. It's incredible. Like we're so lucky. Like we get to like see all these different places, you know, meet all these different people that usually only exist on the internet, or you know, it's amazing. I feel truly lucky that we're able to do this, but it's also the hardest thing. You know, it gets harder and harder as we get older, you know, because I think Kill Lincoln, like, we try to put on a big part of our show is our physicality, you know. And I feel like if there's a point where I can't deliver that, I'd rather not play anymore. Like, I don't want to get up there and be like, and I don't want to get, there's too many bands who I love for that, who I see, and they're like not doing that anymore. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bummer. It makes me think about it. And I don't want anyone to think that about us. I'd rather them remember us as like this, you know, energetic thing. And that's fine. I mean, if, you know, some bands just want to keep on playing, that's great. I'm really happy for them. But for me, like, I just, once I can't do it at this level, at the level I want to do it, I'd rather just not do it anymore.
Yeah. Do you think you see, I mean, you're
at the very beginning of all of this, do you see a point where you won't want to tour?
At this point, I think that's kind of the goal for me, is to do more touring. And then hopefully, like, when I'm not touring, I want to be able to, like, continue working in a recording studio so that I'm able to do music basically at all times is the goal. I think, like, probably as I grow older and my body probably doesn't do as well on tour, then that would make sense to try to, like, focus on more studio stuff and recording and engineering. But at the moment, I would love to continue touring and do more touring, for sure, yeah.
How does it make you feel to know that when you're my age, I'll be 77 years old?
How does it make you feel?
Makes me hope that I'll still be able to do this in some capacity.
Yeah.
I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
I'm Max Beckman. I play guitar in Half Past Two.
Do you think you'll ever want to stop touring?
I don't ever want to stop being in this band. I'll do it till the wheels fall off.
Do you think there'll ever be a time where you'll want to stop touring?
Yeah, like right now.
And by the way, that was JR from Less Than Jay.
Right now. But I love the camaraderie. And it's a weird thing when you've done it for so long, when you're home for a certain, like we've just been home for 4 months, and you get to the point where I start scratching it, like I'm literally tearing at the walls to get out. And like when I finally got down here, it's just this, I don't know, it's like a freeing feeling, you know? So yes, I want to stop touring because my body hates me, but no, I never want to stop touring because I don't know what I would do. I'd lose my mind probably.
Do you think there'll ever be a time in your life where you'll stop touring?
Mark Code of the Code.
I want to die up there.
Yeah.
I want to die up there because it's the only place I ever felt like myself. And it's still, to this day, feel that way. Like, it's the only place I feel like, oh, this is what I'm here to do. I don't know why I'm like that. But there is a selfishness to that that I also had to learn. It's funny, my friend Thomas from Strike Anywhere, like, we had a great conversation years ago about the idea that what we do is selfish. Being gone for so long, being away, you know, I miss the birth of my sister's kids, you know, I missed all of those things that in life that everybody does because I was on tour, like providing or trying to be a part of providing this other escape for other people and myself as well. I look back on it and I reflect on it and I go, oh shit, like, yeah, I probably shouldn't do this for the rest of my life. Like, there's this more important part of life than what we're doing here. That I'm not missing out on, but me not being there is making it so other people are missing out. So I don't know that answer. There's only so much you can get out of the machine before it breaks, I guess. And then life just happens as well. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
Do you see a point in your life where you'll stop touring?
No, I hope I die on the road, to be honest with you, or on the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. That'd be my favorite place to go. So I don't want to go out quietly.
Yeah. Mark Sandman style?
What do you mean?
From Morphine?
Oh, really? Is that what happened?
He went out on stage in Spain.
I would love it. I would love it.
Do you see a point in your life where you'll ever stop?
No.
No?
No.
Speak a little bit.
No. So I feel like I'm just getting started. Music was taken out of my life for a while. It was something that I was not permitted to do without my permit. Like, it wasn't something that I wanted, but it was taken from me. So I feel like getting back into it and getting it into it in a capacity that I am now, like, I'll die before I stop. Literally. Thank you.
You're not the only person that's had that answer.
Yeah? Good. Yeah, 46. Just getting started. Watch me.
Good show. Oh, shit.
Bye. So what you're hearing right now is everybody saying goodbye at the end of the night. And at the end of the night, when the music is done, the audience has gone home and everything is packed back in the vans, we say our goodbyes. Some nights, like this one, it's just until tomorrow, when we do it all over again. Other nights, I don't know when the next time I'll see these people. I've experienced spans 20 years between seeing someone, and we pick up right where we left off. So much of touring for me is about the moments we aren't on stage. the conversations had backstage or on a six-hour drive or at a merch table. This extends beyond the bands to the people who take the time out of their day to join us in this space. We're all a part of this community that exists at these shows on tour. Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slo Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. Hey folks, once a month, our Patreon subscribers get a brand new bonus episode. These bonus episodes are completely different from our usual content. Here's a sample of the conversation we have waiting for you on our Patreon this month.
So over the life of the podcast, who continues to be like any white whales that you haven't gotten a chance to talk to yet, or maybe somebody that turned you down that you really wish they said yes?
I don't really get turned down so much as no replies. I honestly would still love to get anyone from No Doubt to come on the podcast. I've actually really been after Eric Stefani. That's kind of like, that's the member I'd really like, because he was the one that started the band. He was the one that envisioned the band, and he was pretty much the leader of the band up until the point he quit, which was partway through Tragic Kingdom. And he was the ska guy, you know, he was all about ska. So he's a big one. Eric Andre. Why not Eric Idle? I don't know. Let's have him come on too.
To get access to this episode and all of our exclusive backer content, go sign up for our Patreon today. That's patreon.com/indefensiveska. Ska now, more than ever.